And yeah, we'll be hearing from him shortly. But right now, James Rickards is on the line with us from Darien, Connecticut. He's a senior managing director for market intelligence at Omnis, an applied research firm. And he has a few pages for America's briefing book for President-elect Obama. And his pages, well, they're not for the faint-hearted. When it comes to national security, he argues the U.S. needs to be on guard for massive threats to our economic stability. Welcome and good morning, James.
Good morning, Adora.
So what's keeping you up at night?
Well, these threats that we've been talking about, I probably should make it clear, they're not predictions. These are not things that anyone thinks will happen. They're things that might happen. And the question for the United States is, how prepared are we? Traditionally, you know, military, national security, intelligence professionals have all looked at physical threats, weapons, and obviously weapons of mass destruction, cyber warfare, and so forth. We're developing a new field of basically financial warfare, what's sometimes called threat finance, and suggesting that the United States needs to be just as diligent in that area as we are in other areas.
I should add that you were general counsel of the hedge fund Long-Term Capital Management. You oversaw its rescue by the Federal Reserve in its spectacular crash.
Correct.
What kinds of threats to the economy do you think the Obama administration needs to prioritize and take a look at?
Well, there are a number of them. One would be kind of manipulation of markets. Our foreign rivals, not every country that opposes us is an outright enemy. We have some more in the enemy camp, maybe Iran, North Korea, and others, but we have certainly rivalries with Russia and China. And they can do a lot of things for good, but they can also do manipulative things. A simple example, Russia controls a large percentage of the natural gas going into Europe. That's well known, and Russia has the ability to turn off that natural gas, and they actually did so once in supplies to the Ukraine. Now, take that a step further. What if they were going to turn off the natural gas, but in advance of that, they went out and bought some natural gas futures contracts on the New York Mercantile Exchange? Now you go ahead and turn off the gas, the price goes up, and they make money on the futures. So it's kind of a insider trading, if you will, on your own inside information. Those are the kind of manipulations that we've always looked for in the criminal context, and I'm just suggesting we need to look for that in the national security context.
But how do you secure yourself against that kind of threat when you don't control the natural gas? And that certainly is a negotiating point for the Russians as they deal with Europe.
Right. Well, that's a much larger issue, obviously. Natural gas supplies, it's kind of a world market. And I think from an energy perspective, certainly the United States needs to be developing all of its resources. So my particular point is not that I'm an energy expert or a cyber expert per se, but more that these things connect to the financial system. And that really is my background in the area of expertise. And I'm just trying to say that some of these threats that people are familiar with in other contexts can play out in the financial arena. Particularly, you take Al-Qaeda after 9/11 when bin Laden made his first appearance. It was a videotape of a dinner he had in Afghanistan. And he immediately started talking about the stock market. He knew exactly how much the New York Stock Exchange had gone down, had a rough approximation of the amount of losses. And Al-Qaeda has explicitly said that imposing financial damage on the United States is one of their goals. Now, we know the economy...
But James, let me just ask one
sure.
question here. And being involved with long-term capital management, I suspect you know a lot about this.
I'm an expert on financial disasters.
Right. I mean, there were two Nobel Prize winners who helped
Correct.
To found that fund.
Right.
And, that plus the Madoff scandal here, I mean, is it smart, evil people we have to worry about or smart... I don't want to say stupid, but misguided people
I think we need to worry about both, and again, without getting into individual personalities. LTCM, the collapse in 1998, lost $4 billion in about a period of a month, was this crisis in a Petri dish. At the time, markets almost came to a halt. $4 billion seemed like an enormous amount of money. Today, it seems like spare change because we're talking about $4 to $8 trillion of bailout money. So certainly a much smaller crisis by that measure, but all of the lessons were there, and I would say none of them were learned. In particular, Alan Greenspan was very vocal in opposing any kind of derivatives regulation. Well, we should have learned from LTCM that derivatives do need to be regulated in some way. I don't want the government out there telling hedge funds and traders, do this or don't do that. That's not the government's role. But it's kind of like the difference between a baseball player and an umpire. You don't want the government going out on the field with a glove and a hat and playing the game, but you do want somebody behind the plate calling balls and strikes. And the government, starting with the Clinton administration, continuing, I would say, through the Bush administration and Greenspan principally, simply failed to do that. I mean, one thing in particular, the derivatives contracts can do a lot of good. Greenspan said, take them and take an amount of risk. Instead of putting it in one place, slice it up in pieces and sell it to all the people who are in the best position to bear the risk. Well, that actually makes sense, but what he failed to understand is that we would increase the quantum of risk so much. So he had the first-order benefit of diversification. He had that right. But he ignored the second-order cost of expanding the system way beyond anything we've seen before.
So you're really talking about economic policy as opposed to a national security policy that would help mitigate the potential downsides. But before you answer that, get to the threat that you believe potentially China poses, given the fact that they hold somewhere around $500 billion worth of U.S. Treasury bonds.
Right. $500 billion would actually be a low estimate. The number is probably well in excess of a trillion at this point. But, by the way, just to be clear, in this crisis so far, China has absolutely been a partner of the United States. They've been on their best behavior. But things can change. We've seen that before in the, I always go back to the Hitler-Stalin pact where, they were friends until they weren't. And China just sitting there doing nothing has kind of large veto power over a lot of interest rate and exchange rate policies in the United States. We're trying to depreciate our currency a little bit to stimulate exports and create jobs in this country. Most Americans would say that's a good thing, but you're the Chinese. You're sitting there with, upwards of $2 trillion of U.S. dollar-denominated securities, and you see our exchange rate going down. That's basically taking money out of their pocket, as the cliche goes. We're drinking their milkshake.
But certainly a lot for, we're going to have to leave it there, certainly sure. A lot for Barack Obama to consider. Thank you for your thoughts this morning, James
Rickards.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
James Rickards is a senior managing director for market intelligence at Omnis, a few pages for America's briefing book.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org and by the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world. Uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.